Welcome, listeners. Today, I am speaking to Frankie Murray, who is the coordinator of the Open Book Festival in Cape Town. This festival runs from the 4th to the 6th of September. Frankie, welcome, and thank you for spending time with me on my podcast. Frankie is a writer herself. I believe reading someone's own work is the most intimate way to prepare for an interview. So I got hold of her latest book, A Collection of Gaps, and opened it. I say opened on purpose, as her book isn't a usual bound book. It is a box. I opened the box, and inside I found small artifacts and bundles of paper. Each bundle is titled and contains short stories and fragments of thought. Frankie, I'd like to tell you, it was a total delight to open a box and then each bundle. And finding small trinkets along the way made the experience richer. While I experienced delight opening each new bundle, I also felt a deep sadness and grief. The end of the fragments, the actual content, had left me quite sad. Was this Pandora's box, I wondered. Yet each moment of sadness or grief is surrounded by a kind of fragile marvel. I think it's because of the language you used and the form of the box itself. The process of opening a real box and finding different elements inside somehow surrounded the sadness with hope. At the bottom of the box, I found two sheets of stickers, and reading the lines on the stickers made me feel better. So I reread the whole box and tried to find matching places for the stickers inside the fragments. This extra action left an even deeper mark on me than before, leaving me with more hope than I'd had before finding the stickers. My first question to you, Frankie, is twofold. Did you consciously surround deeply melancholic content with such a delicate form? And do you believe that spending more time with sentences and including a physical action from the reader, placing the stickers in this case, creates a greater impact?
Thank you, Christy. I think, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me onto your podcast. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
You're welcome.
And secondly, thank you very much for the reading, the close reading that you've obviously done of A Collection of Gaps. It's always a remarkable experience, actually, to meet someone who's read it. And part of that is around how different people react to what I've put out into the world. It's always an interesting conversation. The Collection of Gaps, it started off as a kind of thought experiment that I was very involved with because the idea, the notions of home were occupying a lot of my like brain space, and it's how I process a lot of stuff is to write about it. And the way my brain works is that it doesn't think about stuff in only one way.
Okay.
And so when I write, it's not that I'm just writing. I draw. I listen to music. I think it's part of a lot of people's processes that you're not necessarily just doing one thing as an act of creation. So I think to go back to your twofold question, the first thing is that the subject itself is quite a fraught one. If you think about where we are as a world currently.
Yes.
So the content is it was never going to be just, you know, comfortable or happy. It was always going to be quite hard. And then in terms of the writing itself, for a very, very long time, pretty much for as long as I can remember, it's been crucial to me that I make whatever I write, whether I'm expecting someone to read it or not, it needs to be moments of like beauty. It needs to capture everything that language can. You know, the art of like striving towards the perfect sentence. And so that's another, it's like, so this project brings together a crucial way that I write and a kind of thought experiment thing that I was doing to try and process the complexities of what home means.
Yeah. So what I did is I actually got those stickers, and then I did the action of also looking for places that I thought, hey, I think this sticker, this line speaks to this part in this box. And so then you create like a, you actually do something as a reader. So I thought, hey, is that is for me, it makes it more, the mark in my body of your story and what you did became deeper. So I thought, is that something that you intentionally did, or was it like a play thing, how it came together?
I had like a grid of fragments that were sometimes original and sometimes things that had turned into part of a short story. And I was wondering what to do with that grid. I wanted to include it in the collection because I thought that it somehow was powerful on its own, like away from the actual stories and fragments. And so with my publisher, it was like, we could actually turn this into a collection of stickers. So that's how the sticker part came along. How people have used it or interacted with it changes from one reader to another. And I've never had like a, okay, this is what must happen.
Yeah.
This is how I see people accessing the body of work. So some people will never use those stickers. They've got a thing of like, this is the sticker collection and it must stay pristine.
Yeah.
Other people will stick them all over the place. It depends entirely on the kind of reader you are and what kind of experience you want to have with the box itself.
Thank you. Yeah. For me, it really worked and it made the experience of your story deeper and more profound. So yeah, I really loved it. Thank you. Your story is molded in a very different way than a usual book, and the storyline itself doesn't follow familiar narrative conventions. The word that comes to mind is fragmentary. It also reminds me of doing a puzzle. My mind tries to piece together what is happening while I read. Why did you write in fragments and not as one storyline? And why the box?
I typically do enjoy writing in fragments. I enjoy the space that it allows.
Yes.
And also the nature of this being a kind of larger project that does not necessarily have a solution.
Yeah.
To me, that did not fit into a simple narrative structure where you've got a beginning, middle, and end.
Yes.
Instead, I feel like the actual, if you think that the topic is home, if
yes.
you don't think of that as an answer, you think of it as a complicated knot at the center of something. The fragments and the short stories, they're all different paths towards that center.
Yeah.
So that you're arriving at a kind of answer of sorts that is never complete, that is never definite, that is never comfortable. Instead, you're just kind of circling closer and closer by coming at it from many angles. So that's how the fragmentary nature of the box came to be. I think that for some people, they understand it to be kind of a collection of some short stories and some poems.
Yes.
I guess it depends on where you do most of your reading. If you typically are reading novels, then this is very, very different. If
yes.
you're typically reading poetry, possibly it's closer to where your comfort zone as a reader is.
Yeah.
Because there is a poetic style in that, like a lot of poetry will leave you guessing the actual intent, and so you have to fill it in. And I think that's part of what I enjoy about the, well, it's a kind of a deliberate thing of the way I write. I want the reader to be part of the process. And so your analogy to a puzzle is actually a good one. If you imagine that you're seeing a puzzle of the sea and there's a section of it that's not complete,
yeah,
you could be like, okay, well, that's sea.
Yeah.
But you could also be like, there's a bird flying over the sea, or there's a boat on the sea in that section. You know, that there's room for you to put something of yourself into the puzzle if it's not complete.
Yeah.
And that's what I hope from the writing that I do as well, that to me, we should all be thinking about what home means. It's geopolitically, the world is in a very, very hard place for so many people. And I think that if, as I think we should be, are all concerned about ideas around home, then it's important to me that the reader is able to place some of what they're thinking into the writing as well. That they can sit with it and be like, oh, well, this is not quite my experience, but there's enough room for myself to fit here. Does that make sense? Or is that the experience that you had, that you found yourself in the stories?
Yeah, many content elements not, but the process of, well, you're puzzling, you actually do what is in the book. So you sort of go step with the person, and then you start to really think what is happening here, and you start to think of smaller elements that you normally, easily brush over. So it really makes the reading like a real thinking process for me. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Thank you. I've thought about this and wanted to ask you, what do you think is the difference in reading experience between a fragmentary story and one that follows a familiar storyline?
If you are a person who reads a lot, sadly, one of the things that ends up happening is that you can feel where the story is going.
Yes.
In a way that is safe, you understand kind of the rules. We're going to get to a point of closure. With fragments, with the kind of thing that I've put out there, I think that it is less predictable. There's less pressure to complete something, to give a finished product to a reader. I mean, there's certainly pieces where everything does come to a close, that this is a complete short story. But I think that because they're part of a collection that does have so many little fragments as well, and letters and, pictures and all of these things, you have to take it as a whole. And so even where the short story is completed and it's a finished product, it's kind of been infected by the fragmentary nature of the rest of the collection. And so they become fragments themselves. Like when I was working on these, I didn't realize how the different pieces would speak to each other actually.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting thing to actually, okay, well, we've now put this together, and sure, no way of controlling it from there. I think earlier on you asked me like why a box?
Yeah.
And it is also it's part of the if you've got a book and it's a book of short stories, typically your reader is going to read the story in or the stories in order, the order that they've been like kind of bound in. And I didn't want that. I didn't want people to feel like there was an order that things had to happen in. And so from the start, I wanted it to be a series of pamphlets that people could read in any order, lend out if they wanted to. That as a reader or as the person who owns that box, you have more control over how you're accessing it. And then, once you get away from the thought of having a bound product, then it's like, well, how are we keeping all of these things in one place? And then obviously I went looking at a whole lot of boxes, and this was the way, well, the one that I enjoyed the most. And I do think it's a lovely product.
I
And
think so
once I
too.
had that, I was like, okay, I can now also, because all of the kind of artifacts, let's call them,
Yeah.
inside the boxes, those are things that I've collected while walking through the city, while being on the beach, wherever I am, I pick things up.
So each box has different.
Every box is
Yeah.
different stuff, and all of the stuff has been in at my house. I've had like these mountains of things, so you could say that this was. This entire project was an exercise in me cleaning my house. Like I've got too much stuff, that I've picked up, rocks and shells and bits of metal and chains that people. So it's stuff that has been dropped by people. It's stuff that has fallen off cars. It's, they're all things that speak to the city that I live in or the places that I'm walking. Which is another version of home. And so with the box, I was thinking, okay, well, I can put all of the stuff into the box, but the nature of a box like this is that something might go missing.
Yeah.
Something might fall out. You might lend a pamphlet to a friend and they don't return it. Or you pour coffee on it and it's no longer readable. Or maybe you're adding to it yourself. You're putting in like a shell that you found or a feather or whatever. And that to me is also one of the things around home, that it's not a stable thing. It's constantly changing. You're getting rid of one piece of furniture or something else is coming in. And I like that. I mean, my brother gets quite anxious about the fact that it won't stay as a whole thing that he got at the beginning.
Yeah.
That's that kind of thing. It causes him some anxiety. And I understand that, but at the same time, I think that it's a beautiful thing that this is a the box is a thing that, I don't know, reflects home better than a book.
Yeah. What I now pick up is artifacts from your home, and now via the box, they are now in my home. Which, yeah, I think that's a it's a nice thread to think about. And I had another one, and I can't think of that one. I lost that one, sorry. And then another question about this is, did you write this box? And this question is actually very core to what I ask many writers is, did you write this box to express yourself or to take the reader to someone else, an other? I was just curious about that.
I think that my writing is always for myself. I've written for as long as I can remember, and very little of what I've written has been published because to me, the point of the writing is not around publication. It's around soothing myself or answering a question or playing in many cases. I love writing. I find it profoundly satisfying and, as I say, calming often. With this particular project, it felt like that whole publishing thing was part of the project itself. You know, like seeing what it could do in the world. And then I also thought that the subject itself is one that I don't think I'm alone in being occupied with. And so I thought that it could serve as a useful addition to anyone's thinking. Even if you're disagreeing with everything in it, that's still a useful engagement. Like, I disagree because why? So yeah, I think it wasn't so much around introducing readers to an other, but more a thing of possibly introducing some readers to themselves. You know, how they're relating to what is in the box. Like where it goes from there, who knows?
Yeah, and I think the way you set it up, the fragments and it being like a puzzle, so I have to think, it actually opens up much more thought about the world and about homes than when you do follow a kind of more traditional storyline.
I think that with a more traditional storyline, you're taken along a road that is quite well marked. And I'm not for a moment saying that like a strong narrative does not allow for thinking or something like that. But you're given a lot more guidance, I think.
Yeah, true. So we both live in South Africa, and you in Cape Town, I in Johannesburg. Your collection of fragments has made me think about my own house, my home. So many people from Malawi or Zimbabwe who are currently in South Africa don't have a roof above their heads at all. Some on the street in front of an embassy, others somewhere in the city with a roof for now, but no idea for how long. How can I feel at home when someone else doesn't have what I have? This is a thought that I had because I read your collection. Your stickers say, "Home is an address." I click on my phone. It's stones in my pocket. Home is small dreams and quiet. It's where I leave my toothbrush. It's leaving my body and floating like wind. The question I carry now is, what if you don't have a toothbrush? What is home then? Does this resonate with you, Frankie, this feeling of what I have and what someone else doesn't?
Yes, absolutely. I think that the world we are living in is one of growing inequality
Yeah.
that is so disturbing on so many fronts. I think that we're also living in South Africa, where currently Afrophobia is on the rise again. And it's appalling, you know, to think about how being born by luck, you end up in one family or another with one level of privilege or another. And I think that all we can do, and I think that we should be doing, is being very aware of the fact that in my case, certainly, I have a level of privilege. I'm certainly not amongst the most privileged, but I do have the roof over my head. I do have easy access to transport. I do have food every day, you know, all of these things.
Yes.
And it is just a matter of luck. And so I have to think, what can I do with the privilege that I have to support, provide an assist, whatever, to someone who has a little bit less or who needs some kind of assistance? You know, so to be open to the, like, moments of generosity, or to like look for ways that you're able to support activist organizations. Or there are so many different things that one is able to do in the world. And even if you find that you're not in a position to assist in any way, that, you know, you've got so much going on in your own head, as many people do. So no judgment here. But I do think that one should at least keep that awareness that we are all like born into where we are through luck. I have not deserved the skin that I've got. I'm just lucky. And I think that just being aware of that is hard. It's like, it's not a comfortable thought a lot of the time.
Thank you for saying this. And yeah, I share your idea. And also, I liked what you just said about small acts of generosity in our daily lives. I would now like to talk to you about your role as a coordinator of the Open Book Festival in Cape Town. You have been involved in the festival between 2011 and 2019, after which you resigned and set up your own company called FM Project Management. You then realized you missed organizing the festival so much that you came back in 2022. So what exactly did you miss when you were not part of the organizing team of the Cape Town Open Book Festival? What exactly did you miss?
Oh, to me, the work that I do with Open Book is pretty much my dream job. I get to do all of this reading, which is already fantastic. I love reading. I love accessing the worlds. I love the way it kind of builds in parts of my life that I don't have enough information about. And there's so much like gap filling happening at the moment, with like pieces of our history being
Yes.
written in, missing voices being written in. It's very exciting. And then the next part is the absolute privilege to have these intensive, enlightening, exciting, passionate conversations about what's actually going to end up being on the program. You know,
Yeah.
like with this mountain of work in your head to figure out how the different books are speaking to each other, and to then turn those into conversations we hope to see happen at the festival. It's an act of such creativity, where you're speaking to people that you have to be able to trust, so that you can play, you can tease things out in a way that you're supported, instead of like, oh, I maybe said the wrong thing, or I do I sound stupid? You know, you have to put all of that kind of nervousness that the ego can give you a lot of the time. You have to put that to one side and just be quite raw in the room with your co-curators. It's a lovely, I absolutely love it. And there's so few times in my ordinary world before I got to do this work where you can have these profound conversations while you're learning so much. I did miss it very intensively.
Yeah, I can imagine, because I think what another core thing of the way I see reading and literature and books is that it makes it a more profound experience if you also act on something that you read, or you do something with it. It's why I do a book club. It's not only reading on your own, but it's also talking with others and creating experience about it. And I can imagine that your job, although I also think it might be very hectic, But you do that. So you have multiple books and text, and then you actually act on it, which, I think it's amazing. When preparing for this interview and thinking about your role and the role of literary festival, my mind started comparing it to other festivals. At wine festivals, food markets, or art fairs, visitors actually get to taste something. A sip of wine, a bite of a burger, or a whole art piece experienced in the moment. But at a literary festival, that's much harder. As a reader or writer, you can't really read a showcased book right there, in that place. So I'm curious, how do you approach this dilemma?
To me, the takeaway from Open Book certainly is the conversations. So we plan these what I think are really exciting conversations to happen up on stage. We then work to make sure that all of the participating writers feel as safe and as held, as supported as possible, so that they're able to focus entirely on just being present in the room.
Okay.
And those like crucial conversations are then going to convince people to buy a book.
Yeah.
Now, books are, as you're aware, they're not cheap. And for many people who come to the festival, they're not like sitting with large amounts in their bank accounts. And so they're having to make these choices around which book can I buy? And for most people, they'll have enough money to buy between one and three books.
Yeah.
Most people. And that means that they're listening to all of these conversations and they're taking all of that away with them, which is fantastic. But they're also, they've spent money on a book that they will go and read later. So I think that's part of the takeaway for anyone. We also have a marketplace at the festival where we give space to people who do creative work and to activist organizations and to some of our partner organizations. And so people can wander around the marketplace and have these really awesome encounters with a new creative worker or someone they haven't seen for years, but who's now, you know, producing a little zine. Those kinds of things are great. And they're also, you know, not to make everything about money, but often you'll be able to buy a little fridge magnet that's a clutch point to the festival. And it's like, ah, oh, remember that. And it like yes. triggers all of these other memories, you know, and it's only 20 Rand or something like that. So there are a variety of ways that we try to make each festival something that is a standout, even if you've been coming to the festival for years.
Yeah. Yeah, so basically it is you do use conversations about books and with writers to inspire people to read more.
To me, the festival, it's a festival of conversation.
Yeah.
So the conversations are through the lens of books. They're not necessarily about the books that people, like they're not like, okay, we're now discussing this book by this writer. We're discussing, you know, the ongoing pandemic of GBV
yes.
through the lens of these three books. So it becomes that kind of thing. So even if you at the other side of the conversation aren't thinking, okay, I must read these books, you do have a whole lot of new insights into a very complicated problem. Or you have ideas about support groups that you could get a sense of community from. Or you have ideas around how you could have a conversation with someone in your life who you think desperately needs to change in some way. So it's like you come out the other side with, yes, possibly I must go and get that book, but also with more tools about how to have quite tricky conversations in your own life.
Thank you. For my listeners, the following two questions are crafted based on an interview Frankie had with Namibian writer Remy Ngamije, who is also the founder of the Namibia's Duk Literary Festival. This interview is online and you can find the link in the podcast notes. In this interview, you said, you think the term literary festival often feels exclusive and unwelcoming. What do you mean by that exactly? And why do you still call it a literary festival if that is how you feel?
When we started Open Book in 2011, we had never done anything like it before. It was a massive, massive learning curve. What we saw quite early on was that while we were generously received by readers in Cape Town, they forgave us many mistakes. We were seeing an older, whiter audience than what we wanted to encounter ourselves. We wanted the festival to feel like Cape Town. It's an urban festival. We wanted it to reflect the diversity of the people who live here. And so we had to do a whole lot of thinking about, what does it mean to be a festival that centers books in a country where so many have not encountered books as an easy, accessible, beautiful way of understanding the world, or giving yourself some breathing room, or all of the things that books can be. If you haven't had that as part of your life, why should people want to attend a literary festival? So part of the work there was around, okay, we're not actually a literary festival. We are a festival of conversation. So we now talk about Open Book as Open Book Conversations That Matter. That's our tagline. And I think I said to you earlier that the conversations, they're about subjects that we think are crucial through the lens of books. But if you don't think of yourself as a reader, but you're interested in the world, then you are going to absolutely enjoy the festival, even if you're not buying a book. The point is to actually be there, to be one of the people in the room, and to add your voice or to understand something differently.
So the tagline now is conversations that matter.
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I just wondered because literature, I do feel that with my book club, I do challenging books, literature. So, but it's hard to find people who do that, who join. Also because literature is quite hard. It's never, almost never a easy ride. So if I say it's a literature book, or it's literature, then my audience automatically gets smaller who will join. So that's why I wanted to ask this question. Another one, a little bit similar, I think, is when I think of an art fair or a walkabout, the artist is often right there, present, able to respectfully showcase their work in the room. But you and Remy talk about literary festivals differently. Remy says in the interview, not everyone believes readers and writers should really meet, that it could be ground zero for rebellion. So I find that generally strange. Why would there be this tension, this risk in a conversation between a reader and a writer, when there isn't the same tension between a viewer and an artist at an art fair? What is it about books or about writers that makes that meeting so much more loaded? Did I understand it correctly, or did I miss something?
I think that the tension that Remy and I were talking about, it's not between the reader and the writer. It's more around between the reader and writer and those with power. So if, as we being me and Remy, believe that the conversations are moments where you can gather, find community, and also think about how to change the very problematic world that we find ourselves in. What are those actions? Are they small? Are they big? Are they just doing like small things day to day in your own individual life? Or like basically like anything is on the table, but it's in those moments of gathering that you can share ideas and you can find strength and you can get more tools to in this ongoing fight. So I think that the tension is between those in power and us, where the people in power do not want to lose that power. They don't want the systemic issues to be undone or changed because it changes the comfortable lives that they are benefiting from.
So you actually refer to that if you have the difficult conversations at the festival, you also talk to the people in power who are responsible for it. And so you make it a very heavy and big conversation. Am I getting that right now?
The conversations, they're not necessarily like, okay, this is all so-and-so's fault or something like that. But if you are having, I'll use the example of GBV again.
Yes.
If you're having a conversation around GBV and you're thinking about South Africa, where we've got this amazing constitution, but there's so many parts of the constitution where there does not seem to be the will to ensure that it's protected.
Yeah.
And that it's that kind of thing. Like, where is the will to actually stop the scourge of GBV in South Africa? You know, like none of the things that could be done seem to be being done. And that to me rests with government. Like, so it's that kind of thing.
I now understand it.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for this. Do you have two or three main themes you organized the festival around this year? And could you name them and tell me why those themes?
We typically don't theme the festival, but there are strands of programming that come out. So there's usually several events that will explore the world through the lens of queerness, for instance. There are usually several events that speak to feminist activism.
Yeah.
This year, I know that we're also going to be exploring African identity in different ways, including the African diaspora.
Yeah.
And partly that is to do with how critical we think it is to have those conversations at a time when we're looking at a rise in Afrophobia in South Africa, that it is so important. And I think that will probably inform a lot of our conversations, whether we plan it or not.
Yeah.
But it's also to do with, you know, what could be possible if we were thinking in terms of Pan-African identity instead of South African identity. I think that we'll probably also be exploring areas around mental health. We often have strong areas of programming in those spaces. I think that there's usually a little bit of stuff that comes in around loss or grief,
yeah,
family relationships, parenting,
yeah,
all stuff that's part of almost everyone's life in some way.
Okay, and then I did see you had two, I think you call it crowd pleasers. Am I using the right word? Sports writing? Is that is one?
And yeah, then, we yeah? have...
How does that work?
We close the festival every year with writer sports. And that is, we get six writers, and it is hosted by the festival director, Mervyn Sloman.
Yeah.
And the audience suggests topics and genres, and then the writers have to write according to those topics and genres. It's usually hilarious.
Yeah.
You get these absolutely crazy ideas coming out. There's a fair amount of cheating, I think.
Okay. And how long do the writers get to write then? How many minutes?
I think that they usually get like between 3 and 5 minutes. So there's no dead time where everyone is just writing. It's usually like one table will write while the other does an activity, and yeah, then there's like the reading of that while the other one is writing. So it's like a bit of everything going on the whole time. But it is just, I think partly because it's the last event of the festival, everyone's like feeling that like crazy euphoria. But it's a fantastic end to the festival. Yeah. So much fun.
Sounds great. Sounds great. Who's your audience?
We're doing everything that we can to bring in younger readers. So between ages of, you know, 18 to 35.
Yes.
And that's partly to do with the fact that if we don't actively work to attract younger festival goers, then the festival has no future.
Okay.
So a lot of our work is to attract that demographic.
Okay. And then what are your ways of reaching people and persuading them to visit?
We concentrate primarily on social media.
Okay.
That's partly to do with our budget. We have a small budget,
Yeah.
and partly to do with how our audience is generally interacting with the world. So, of course, we send out press releases, we send out newsletters, we'll get like airtime on radio, but most of the information sharing that we see is actually Instagram more than any other channel.
Yeah. Okay, so in Instagram and then TikTok?
We've considered TikTok and we may still come back to it, but unless you're posting regular content, it's not a great way to reach people. You've got to be able to commit to posting content like once a day, and it's got to be good. And we just don't have someone to put that kind of time into creation, unfortunately.
Yeah, makes sense. Thank you. You've told me beforehand you wanted to highlight five authors in this podcast who will be present at the festival. Can you tell us who they are, where they are from, and one characteristic that gives the listeners a real sense of what makes them special? And to say it more specifically, for each author, can you then name one difficulty that's present in their work and one thing that's a real delight to read? And I'd like to give you an example. If I had to describe Remy Nkamije's book, Only Stars Know the Meaning of Space, which I've read and I'm going to discuss this book tomorrow at the book club. I absolutely love this book. I would then say it's a mind puzzle, again, like your work, that in the end also it comes together with hope. So I thought can you maybe do something like this with the five authors that you would like to highlight?
I will do my very best. I don't know that I'll be able to be as succinct as you, but I can at least give you five writers and the
Yeah.
books and a little bit about why I'm excited about them.
Yes.
First up is Sulalei Fiamanyo. He's based in Scotland, and he has written a tremendous novel called Before We Hit the Ground, which is set primarily in Scotland, but there is an incredible idea, and I think partly because of my own interests, an idea around what home, where is home, and why. Second up is Ike Echiruo, who, his novel is called The Comfort of Distant Stars, and it is unbelievable. It's exploring the tension between the seen and the unseen world.
Okay.
It's exploring family. Oh, it's so good.
I saw,
Yes.
yeah,
Yeah.
it's
The
a, you've got a
comfort.
huge
Yeah.
bright cover. Yeah, it immediately got my
Yes.
attention. Yeah.
He's based between Ghana and Nigeria. Then we have Faraz Muhammad, who is
Yeah.
based between South Africa and America. And he's written a novel called Motherland, which explores identity and time in a way. It's set across two different time periods. One is apartheid South Africa, and the other is kind of a more present day. And what that kind of separation of times makes possible is very interesting.
Okay.
We're including Sue Nyati again this year.
Yeah.
She's been at the festival before. I don't think that she needs any introduction currently.
No, I.
The Polygamist has just done all sorts of things, and I'm very, very
Yeah.
happy for her.
Yeah, that's very, very awesome. I saw that. Okay, and then one more.
Thando Fuze is a poet from Durban. She is bringing out a collection called Fluent in the Language of Burial. It is revolutionary. It is angry. It is something that I think everyone should read.
Okay. And then so these authors will be present, all of them?
Yes, they'll all be there. I'm not sure. I haven't done everyone's flights yet, so I don't know if everyone will be present on all 3 days,
Okay.
but there will certainly be opportunities for people to meet them, to get books signed, to listen to conversations.
Super. Thank you. Then to round this off, so how my mind works, I can sometimes have these like ideas about concepts, and then I go and I'll take all the nuance out of it, and then there's a line that pops up in my mind. So I thought I'll give you two bold statements, I call them. And then I just would like you to, yeah, maybe bring back the nuance or tell me like you're going wrong there or disagree, anything. The first one is literature is a deviation from the basic story.
I don't know. I think that literature is a way of reinforcing some of the basic stories.
Okay.
I think that at our core, we are storytellers. We understand the whole world through stories.
Yes.
We understand ourselves, everything. And I think that with literature, you're able to like really, I don't know, like swim in it. To play around with what's possible, to understand how we can change our stories.
That's beautiful.
I wouldn't say that it's a deviation. I think that it's a letting it be all of you.
Letting it be all of you. Beautiful. And the other one is read in solitude, respond with a multitude.
You know that thing of reading in solitude? I do enjoy some solitude with the reading thing.
Yeah.
I love that. But I also really enjoy being read too. And I would happily attend an event where I wasn't expected to talk to anyone or anything like that, but I could listen to someone reading something beautifully.
Yeah.
There's something oh, so good about being read to. It feels so luxurious.
Yeah.
And I also think about like the work that Sean Buck does with the Silent Book Club.
Yeah.
Where there are regular gatherings of people who are reading together.
Yeah.
So it's an hour, you come together, you know, beforehand, you spend an hour reading, and then, you know, you can either go home or you can carry on chatting to people. So I think that there are ways where the act of reading is not necessarily one of solitude. It doesn't have to be. But I do think, you know, to speak to the second part of what you were saying, the coming together, the discussing, the like getting excited about a book together. There's something very enjoyable about that.
That is also what I see it as my job of my work to inspire people to also talk about it, because in my experience it then becomes more. So you get not only your view, but you get other people's views as well. Frankie Murray, thank you for sharing your experiences and thoughts with me and my listeners. I really enjoyed talking to you. I gained so much more insight into the world of literary festivals. I hope many readers and writers will join the Cape Town Open Book Festival and be part of this very exciting platform. As I do believe we should read and then talk about it with others, as only then can a reader truly discover more meaning. Thank you.